When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
You were raised to believe the world was black and white. But what if it isn't? What if the rigid belief system you have never questioned is wrong? What if the world is actually a lot more gray? This show is for the seekers, the explorers, those brave enough to step outside of certainty and question everything. Join your hosts as they sit across from the world's leading thought leaders, visionaries, religious gurus, entrepreneurs, philosophers, and more to tackle difficult topics. You don't need all the answers to find meaning in life, but you should be free to ask all the questions. This is Figuring It Out.
Welcome back to the Figuring It Out podcast. Today we're going to be talking about why the current generation is so drawn to religion, and we're questioning the necessity of religion in the culture. And I picked some very interesting clips related to this topic that made me feel like Travis when I was watching it, to be honest. But we'll get to that. Interesting. Anyway, first.
I'm curious.
What are we reading, watching, listening to?
Jackie, ladies first.
Ladies first. Cultish, actually, from
Amanda Montell.
Eric's recommendation. Yes.
Love it.
Yeah, super interesting. I think the biggest thing that stuck out to me was just like the language of it. I think it's so well, and Travis, I think you always say this, but like when you're in it, you never want to like when people call it a cult, you just think like, okay, yeah, that's really extreme. It's not. But how she breaks down just like the language of it and how people like talk about it and this like the way they say things was just like super interesting to me on that front. And then I thought it was interesting too, because obviously the Aubrey Marcus thing that came out this week about him being, I guess the New York Times is like doing a whole like blog or article or something on him on that fact. And it was just really interesting again, because it's honestly like for me watching it, I was like, it's very sincere on Aubrey's part. I don't think that he really thinks that he is, at least I choose to believe he's not.
Like,
I don't know,
the sauce kind of thing.
Yeah, like where you do when you're in it or when you're leading something like that, I don't think that you truly think that it is, like you're genuine in that it's not. But I just thought it's super interesting. I don't know, the breakdown that she does, it's a really good book. So yeah, definitely recommend it. Thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah, it's a cool book, and it's one of those that like I think the big takeaway is just everything has streaks of cultiness in it. And you mentioned like the vocabulary. She's a linguist for people listening. Okay. So like her whole background is how words are used. So like it's fascinating after reading the book, like when you listen to political debates or to pastors or to businessmen, like how much verbiage is so manipulative.
Yeah.
Even if it's not intended to be manipulative.
It is. Yeah.
It's like the secondhand, like, oh, we're gonna say this because we've seen it work.
Yeah.
But without questioning why. But anyway, it's a cool book.
Yeah, good book.
So I was listening to Tony Hinchcliffe on Joe Rogan.
He's the one that we saw at the club, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So we basically partied with him, even though we didn't talk at all. We're just across the table.
It was party adjacent is what it was, is that he was partying at this table and we were partying at this table.
But it was a great show.
What happened was we were in Austin for her birthday and we had gotten tickets to Joe Rogan and Friends. And so the night before we were just like bar hopping downtown and then see Tony Hinchcliffe at one of the bars. And
like, I'm going to hop into that one.
But we, good one. But we, but we kind of like co-mingled with his group a little bit, but we didn't get to meet him.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh yeah, that's Tony Hinchcliffe. He's like one of the, you know, he does the mothership all the time. And if he's here, I bet he's going up with the Joe Rogan and Friends lineup. Cause they don't tell you the lineup. They just say Joe Rogan and Friends. And it's like, whoever happens to be in Austin,
it's always the same three people.
Well, I assume it's probably some overlap because some people live there obviously. And some people don't, but yeah, he ended up going up. That was, and it was the first time I ever like saw him perform stand up like that. He murdered. It was so
killed,
good.
Maybe.
Oh yeah, yeah. Some might say he killed, because his show is called Kill Time.
He's one of those guys that's like, he was like stealthy in like when I would watch his stuff. Like,
oh yeah,
because I used to watch stuff in not in spite of, but like he wasn't the draw to watch anything.
Right, like Kill Tony. Like, you're
Kill
saying
Tony, but Shane Gillis is on, or Kill Tony, but so and so is on.
Right,
and then over time, I was like, oh, he's really funny.
He's like the show.
And then And then in doing a show like that's like 3 hours, it is like crazy how I host.
Yeah.
But then it was actually the Tom Brady roast where I was like, oh, shoot. Like,
on a different level.
He's like obliterated
in
that.
Yeah. That was good too.
Actually, Joe Rogan texted Tom Brady to get Tony Hinchcliffe in that lineup. He's like, bro, you have to do. So he messaged him, was like, this guy's one of the greatest roasters alive.
Yeah.
You got to bring him. So he like sent the information over to Tom Brady, and then Tom Brady passed it on to his team.
Isn't that cool?
How Tony got into it.
That's something I do like about Joe Rogan is like how much he helps other people.
Shines the spotlight.
But also like how many comedians that would have access to Tom Brady would just be like, hey, bro, can I get up?
Yeah.
That's fair.
It's crazy. Like he's not even in it at all, but still behind the scenes. Like, hey,
right.
I don't want to travel out, but
exactly. Yeah. I'm not sure this is worth my time. But Tony Hinchcliffe is a murderer when it comes to roasts and stuff like that. So like it was a good call. You know what I mean?
But what about Kim Kardashian?
He actually.
I thought she did good.
She did okay.
People were so
okay.
Mean
I thought
to her,
you were
though.
About to be like, no. I thought she was great.
Oh, is she gonna roast Kim Kardashian?
Are you a fan?
I walked in yesterday to her watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Yeah, so well, actually, isn't it called just the Kardashians now?
It's on Hulu.
Yeah, because Hulu.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I don't know anything about it, but I hear it's great.
Fun fact is that Tony Hinchcliffe actually wrote for other roasts in the past as well on Comedy Central and stuff. So he's like always kind of behind the scenes.
I would
stuff.
Love like,
but he was like he wrote some of Martha Stewart's jokes in the Justin Bieber roast and stuff like that.
I would love to see a documentary about the writer's room for comedians. Like,
oh yeah,
how that
totally.
Works. Because like
I would love to see more
murky
from guys like
world
that.
Of like you know they write for like the Oscars and stuff, but like you never see those people.
Yeah. Well, and they wrote for basically anybody who's was in the Tom Brady roast who wasn't a full time comedian.
Yeah,
well, the writers are writing for all of them.
Kim didn't write her
no,
stuff.
And like Drew Bledsoe and some of those other guys. Like they didn't
Kim's actually
stuff.
Producing a comedy special on Netflix, and in it,
that's very
really?
Interesting.
Yep. Like she's,
it's like it's a movie. It's like called Fourth Wheel or something like that, and she's starring and producing it, and she just sold it to Netflix.
People hate. She's so fucking talented.
Legitimately,
it's crazy.
Though,
like detour. But like, do you watch the Kardashians like all the time? Like,
I mean, I keep up with it. Yeah,
like the stuff. Keep where up. She would, I didn't mean like that. You keep up with the Kardashians, Jackie? Well, you know, I do keep up with them.
Say that on purpose.
That'd be a good name for a show,
funny,
huh?
Yeah. No, but like when she's in, I think it was Milan for Fashion Week, and she's like designing these looks,
right?
And, like, all,
right.
I was like, that's incredible. I know, obviously, totally. There's a team of designers and stuff, but like, it's incredible that you can go from that and like, because that again, your name can only get you so far.
Yeah.
To doing that, to going and doing a roast, to doing like,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm just always like, how do you hate on somebody that's like hustling like that?
Because
like.
Like this.
It's insane.
I'm just kidding.
To your credit, to that I thought about that episode. I think something I appreciate about Kim Kardashian is I feel like she always says that too, though, on the show. So I was like, I don't know why people think that I can do this. Or like even when she was
American
going
Horror
to Milan.
Story.
Yes. Yeah. And well, even when she went to Milan, I don't know if you watched the episode the whole time, was just like, I'm not qualified for this. Like, I'm not like, why? Like, I need help.
I'm
like, what am I doing?
This,
yeah. Like, to where it's like humanizes her too, where it's like she's. She's stepping out of her comfort zone. I respect that.
No, we're all on the same page.
Well, she was.
Stop being a punk, Travis.
American Horror Story was like, the season wasn't great all around, but she was like so good. And everyone was like, she's going to suck. And then it was literally like, everyone was like, oh, she's the best thing, carried the season on her shoulders. So I was like, I feel like that's every single, whatever.
Yeah.
This is not the Kim Kardashian fan club podcast.
Yeah. So basically you got to start watching Keep Up the Kardashians with me, Travis.
No.
We should do a watch along bonus episode every week.
Oh, what
watching
now?
What?
A watch along bonus episode.
Oh, yeah. That'd be really fun. Really
it
fun,
is.
You guys.
It's good TV.
Me and Eric would love it. Okay. You're outnumbered
you guys can
here.
Sip
so.
Some Chardonnay and chit chat about the Kardashians.
You're speaking my language.
Okay.
Right?
Down.
I still haven't even finished my original thought from this Tony Hinchcliffe.
Oh, sorry. You're watching Tony Hinchcliffe.
Yeah. So after all of that, basically. The thought that I was going to give to listening to him was that Rogan was kind of giving him his flowers a little bit and just being like, it's really cool to watch you, you know, do your thing. Cause he was like, it was just not too long ago, just wasn't that big. And again, something that I liked and appreciate about Joe Rogan is that he, when he finds people that he genuinely appreciates and has interest in or respects, he does do his best to like shine lights on them and isn't worried about himself at all. And like, I just think that that's super cool. And he's definitely
always said that too, doesn't he? With like places he eats too.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah, he's always just like posting and just like when, if he finds something cool, he just gives it attention, you know, which is just one of the cool, he hasn't gotten lost in the sauce and like been, he hasn't been like, he hasn't sold out, you know what I mean? Like he just like does what he wants.
My lifestyle. Or
right. Mine,
or
exactly. This, right. Or his audience, not, doesn't gatekeep his audience, you know? But so I just thought it was interesting that somebody like Tony, he's been doing this for so long and sometimes it can feel like we're doing stuff for so long and we're not getting the results that, that we want. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I'm speaking from personal experience, whether it's in my business or in my podcast or whatever it is, like sometimes it just, the toll is taken. And you feel like a failure, you feel like you're not, you know, getting where you want to go. And you can look, but there's also so many examples like a Tony Hinchcliffe of somebody who has been doing this for so long and up to the last 4 or 5 years, really like 2 years, he's been in relative obscurity and then he's blown up to become like the number one live podcast in the world in the last like couple of years. And then that, and then the Tom Brady roast was just like a, you know, rocket booster to just push him up into a completely different, you know, stratosphere, which I just think is really cool. And another lesson, it's always a good lesson for me to take away, to realize like, man, these people have been around for like writing jokes all that long, you know, time ago for this other roast, and then roasts go away and nobody thinks roasts are going to happen ever again. And then the most watched event in Netflix history is the roast of Tom Brady, and Tony Hinchcliffe gets a couple of minutes, kills, and now the opportunities that have come from that one thing are insane, and like just at, from his own mouth. So again, it was just a cool thing to sit there and realize, like, look, even people who've been doing this for way longer than I've been doing what I've been doing, you know what I mean? It's like they had a relative, you know, amount of success, and I'm sure he would have been totally happy with, you know, not even getting to the level that he's at now. But it also just spoke to me in the fact that like when you're doing something that means something to you, when you're doing something that matters to you or that you enjoy, it's just a matter of like continuing to do it and figuring out a way to like stay in the driver's seat and not, you know, have to exit somewhere, you know, and like eventually it's probably going to go pretty well for you. And so I just really appreciated that this week.
Well, I was joking earlier. All I feel like I've been watching is Figuring It Out episodes. I've been editing all of our recordings and then Travis Makes Friends episodes, which...
So share us the knowledge you've learned from us.
I haven't got any knowledge from this show. I hope you guys
are. Hopefully someone does.
I did like from your interview you just did with Nicole Wingard and Mike
Chambers.
Mike shared something where he said the biggest mistake we made early on in our social media strategy, and they created this huge viral marketing campaign. But he said one of the big mistakes early on is we were looking to see what other brands were doing. He said the reason we couldn't figure out what to do that would be different and stand out is we were actually looking for inspiration from others instead of doing something new.
Right.
And I thought that was really cool. And it was something like, you know, everything that I think we've seen do well, and like even this show in the first week has been doing really well. And I think it's just putting aside the thought that's like, well, there's nothing like that, or people aren't doing that. Who's going to have this conversation? Yeah. Like, it was really encouraging from a content creation side to be like, it doesn't have to look like Joe Rogan. It doesn't have to look like, you know, Kevin Hart. It doesn't have
and
to.
It's probably better if it doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, it would be great if I could do it at the level of you guys. Yeah. But, you know, to be something different, and it doesn't have to be the same format, and we can, you know,
right,
all that kind of stuff. But I'll get us into the main topic because I know we're tight on time. But I was on YouTube the other day. Well, let me back up first. A couple months ago, I found an article and I kept meaning to bring it up and I forgot. But it's very relevant. There was a study that was done a couple years ago, and polling revealed that 1 in 3 Gen Z adults say they believe in a higher power. So that's 18 to 25 year olds. That's up from 1 in 4 in 2021. And what they also found was that there's higher levels of religiosity in people aged 18 to 24 than any other age group, like boomers, millennials. Like, there's a huge spike in drawing to religious belief within that generation. That's a whole episode we could talk about the why. I have my theories and we can get into it. But then I was on YouTube the other day, and I think I got mixed with your algorithm, and Chris Williamson popped up. And the only reason I clicked is because it said he talked about his thoughts on religion. So I wanted to play those clips, and then he referenced an Eric Weinstein interview where he talks about religion more. And I want to play that clip and kind of get your thoughts. I've got mixed thoughts, opinions. I'm curious to know what you guys think.
Okay.
Bradshaw. Congrats, I've been a listener since day one. Thank you. Have you considered diving into and learning more about religious practices? As a devout Catholic, I love what you do and the aims you've incorporated into your life and daily practice. I see a strong correlation. Congrats again. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I spent Easter Sunday morning in Bible church and watching a rock band, kind of, which was really cool. And yeah, I would learn more. I have to say, I was kind of switched off, you know, the kind of old, stuffy, puritanical approach to religion that I saw when I was growing up in the northeast of the UK. It wasn't very alluring. It didn't sound wholesome or reassuring or faithful or any of those things that you want really from a good religion. And yet now I've grown up a little bit, it seems a little bit different. And I also understand that this is like the classic podcast bro arc of going from extreme rationalist to religious fundamentalist. Don't think I'm there, but I would be interested in learning more about it. And I certainly think that there's a lot of wisdom I've probably dispensed, and maybe a lot of people have as well, dispensed at my peril, and probably at my disadvantage too, by getting rid of or not listening to basically split-tested wisdom from a ton of different traditions over a few thousand years. So yeah, maybe.
The phrase you said in that I liked was the split-tested wisdom. Mm-hmm. I've never heard someone say that before.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is such a smart way to look at information.
Yeah.
And the idea of dispensing, I was fascinated because it's clear he doesn't come from a very religious background.
Right.
So I was telling Jackie before we were recording, like, I see the draw, and I think it's why the younger generation is flocking. I think because millennials did turn so much from religion, I think the next generation always goes, you know, what did I miss?
Yeah.
Same way that religious kids go, I'm going to go explore the world. Like, I think there's always that pendulum swing.
Sure.
But the whole concept of, you know, I feel like I'm dispensing of some important information that's been there for thousands of years really stood out to me. Mm-hmm. And I love the whole idea of the split test of wisdom. But I was curious your guys' takeaway on that short clip.
I more or less agree with that. That's really the things that I'd still take away from. And then we've talked about it on the show is like, here's some things that we find crazy that the Bible says, but here's some things that we find extremely helpful and to this day, really valuable. And that obviously has to exist, you know, cause like you said, it's people who've been thinking about this stuff for a really long time.
Yeah.
You know, just within the context of their broader, more rigid worldview. But it doesn't mean that everything that they say is incorrect and we should run from everything that's, right. you know, that's taught in that world. So, I tend to fully agree with that. The exploration of religion, like moving toward like a religious set of rules, I don't resonate with obviously at all. But looking at different religions and then taking pieces of that wisdom, because it's been, like you said, split tested through generations and generations of people is still extremely valuable.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, that's what's funny that you said that, because before, obviously, I didn't know that was like the sentence you would pull out of it, but that's probably what I would pull out that stuck out to me. I think it's interesting, though, too, you always saying that, obviously, like, you are not a rule follower. And I think it's always interesting, like, the opposites we are in that sense. But I think the more that I respect how much you've stepped out of it, but still kept morals from it. Cause I think that we've talked about that a lot too. For me, I feel like that's something that I found comfort in religion was the rules. And I think that he's the actual polar opposite. That was probably something that you hated the most was the rules. And I think coming out of that and creating your own rules is something that I respect even more so. And that's what I've tried to do a lot more recently. Cause I feel like when I first got out of religion, it was easier to be like, ah, whatever, and nothing matters. And it's just like, I'm
that's
just,
a documentary you know. Series. We'll yeah. Jackie's arc.
Oh, geez. No, let's not do that. But again, I just think it's...
There'll be some good stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, I just think that's something that I think anybody who's listening to this too, of just making sure that you take the time to actually find your own rules and standards. And just because you don't have them within a religion, also you still have to try to find them for yourself afterwards. Yeah. I think a lot of people in our position, and especially initially when it happens, so many people are so apt to just throw everything out the door and like yeah. still find the things that are important to you and the things that are the morals that you want to have and the standards you want to have, and make sure you still draw those lines in the sand for yourself yeah. and for your family, and don't just, you know, let all of them go to waste.
Well, that's what's so funny to me about you is that you're such like an anti-rule follower, but you literally have notes and journals and a poster upstairs written with like your rules for life.
That's fair.
Like, everywhere. Like, I don't know anybody that keeps more of a rule book with them all the time than you.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's what Jackie was saying is like, it's stepping outside of like arbitrary rules
yeah.
and determining what rules you want to abide by as an individual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's far more important than like, oh, just because tradition says
yep.
we, you know, yeah. we don't turn on the lights on Saturday.
And it's
know?
The process of finding those rules that right. I find really valuable.
Yeah,
you know, there's no thinking, work, or courage required to follow a set of rules that's been given to you since birth.
Yeah.
None. Arguably no value in a lot of senses. And so I like having the rules is one thing, but me coming to the conclusion that those things are intrinsically helpful and valuable, like I look at it like a game, you know, it's like life is quite literally an infinite game. There's infinite possibilities. But if you operate under a certain set of rules or principles or practices, you can tend to get better results out of life or out of whatever game you're playing. So I look at it very much like, you know, like I'm playing blackjack or something like that. It's like, I know if I sit down at a blackjack table, I'm not counting cards, but I just play basic strategy and I know the rules to basic strategy. And I know that those rules for blackjack specifically still have the casino winning like a, you know, whatever 2.7%, 3% edge or whatever the casino has against basic strategy. But I just know the rules to the game. So like, I know that if I get dealt this hand and the dealer has that showing, that I'm going to hit and I'm going to hit every single time. And sometimes that hit makes me bust and I lose my money, but also bust, huh? Just couldn't hold it in.
Well, okay. The thing is, it wasn't fair because I almost made a joke when you said I'm going to hit every single time.
So you were already thinking about hitting and then, you're like, and then busting.
I'm going to bust.
I'm going to come.
Okay, sorry.
But yeah, even though I might lose that hand, I'll say it like that for you. Even though I might lose that hand, I know that like if I do that over time, that it will provide the best result for me, if that makes sense. And so that's how I kind of like set those rules up for myself, where it's like, I know that sometimes I don't want to go do this thing, or sometimes I don't want to, or sometimes maybe I do want to do something that I shouldn't do or whatever. But I know that if I stick to the rules that I've set, that over time, it'll eventually, you know, pan out, make me happier, help me make better decisions, be a better filter for making the right choices, which is really what life's about, just a series of choices. And so if you don't ever set up systems to help you make those choices, then it's, you know, really difficult to make the right ones consistently over time. Yeah. And if you're never auditing the rules that you've been given, how do you know they're the best ones to help you specifically live the life that you really want to live, you know, because that's the problem, is like you accept somebody else's rules wholesale.
Yeah.
It's like those rules are set up for somebody else. Yeah. They're not set up for you. You know, we're all so different. Every single person is so different. Like what matters to you doesn't matter to somebody else. What you enjoy, somebody else might not enjoy. Like things that you have fun doing, maybe somebody else doesn't, you know, have fun doing those things. Like everybody is completely different. So to just assume that a set of rules that was given to you from the time that you were born is going to be the set of rules that's most advantageous for you to live a long, healthy, happy, fulfilled life is just, it's probably not the case, you know? And if you don't do the work to go through and find your own rules, like, I mean, how do you expect to end up at all where you want to be, you know?
Well, I think often in religion, we find our purpose in following the rules themselves as opposed to what purpose the rules serve.
Yeah.
Oh,
and I think like, again, when your full identity is in, oh, I can do this level of performance, but there's no like perceivable benefit to anybody or yourself. Like, I think that's where it kind of, it, like you said, becomes meaningless. But this show is brought to you by BetterHelp. It's a new year, which means it's time to write a new chapter of your life. And if you're someone like me, maybe the last couple of chapters have been a little bit rough here and there. Maybe it's time to finally experience a new plot twist, or maybe there's a part of your story you've been wanting to revise. Well, it's not going to happen just because you made a resolution that's going to fade by February. It's about picking up the pen and becoming the author of your own life. And I want to encourage you to think of therapy as your editorial partner, helping you write new chapters and create the meaningful story you deserve to live. Starting therapy with BetterHelp did just that for me. I was going through some of the biggest transition periods and toughest moments since starting this podcast, and having a therapist to bounce ideas off of and get the tools I need to live a better, more fulfilled life was so incredibly invaluable. It's not about just getting their system and their philosophy that you plug yourself into. It's about having an open dialogue and finding out what steps are best for you in your specific journey. I know my specific journey is extremely busy, and so that's why it's helpful that BetterHelp is fully online. It makes therapy affordable and convenient, and they serve over 5 million people worldwide. And the best part is they have over 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties to choose from, and you can easily switch therapists anytime at no extra cost. The first therapist I sat down with was not a good fit for me and my needs, and I went in the next day and scheduled an appointment with a different therapist who ended up being an absolute game changer for me. You can start writing your own story today with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/preacherboys today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/preacherboys. Get 10% off your first month right now with BetterHelp. It's time to write your story.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull, Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern. Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Paynes Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
I wanted to play, this one's similar to what he said, and I actually played them out of order, but they were so similar, it didn't really matter. But it's just another piece where he references the clip I want to really talk about.
Felim Kennedy 6653, you mentioned in your recent podcast with Eric Weinstein that Latin Rite Catholics are one of the fastest growing religious groups in the West. Have you or are you interested in speaking to anyone from that group or have gone to their services? So I don't know much about them. I would love to go to one. If there is one in Austin, I probably should try and find it. I actually went to my first American church service on Easter this year at, God damn it.
Don't swear.
The Ridge Bible.
That's number one.
Something. God damn it. Anyway, it's 20 minutes away from me here. And it was like a rock concert. It was was not what I expected. I don't know what I thought a Easter Sunday service was, but it wasn't that. So it was cool. And I think there's a lot to be said for having ritual, having a sense of community, doing a little bit of self-inquiry. I came out of it feeling nicely down-regulated. But like, look at what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to intellectualize something which is faith to a lot of people. But that's because I don't have that faith. I would be interested in going. I don't know what I'd speak to someone from that group about. Although an interesting conversation would be, why do you think that lots of people are being attracted to it? So maybe I will speak to someone from it.
We can kind of dive into this, the clip you referenced with Eric Weinstein.
Yeah.
But I'm so fascinated when people just have no context, which was
I was just going to say
it's
that too.
So weird. Like, I can't even begin to understand. It's probably the reason, like I was talking about before you record, like, it's crazy on TikTok, like the stuff people go like, oh my God. And like these clips blow up and it's like, that's just stuff we talk about every day. That's like, Ray, remember that thing?
Yeah.
And, but I feel that way. Like Sarah Edmondson, like when I've talked to her and she's like, yeah, like, we didn't grow up in church, or like, Sharon, did Let Us Pray. Like, she was like, I never really knew what it meant to have the fear of God told, like, to, and I was like, I can't imagine not waking up in terror, you know, imagine not being like, oh, I'm terrified God's going to be really upset with me.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just really interesting. But anyway, you referenced this interview with Eric Weinstein. This is not an endorsement from me of Eric Weinstein, but I thought it was an interesting conversation piece. And I can pause it here and there, but it's a little bit meatier clip.
We need churches.
Okay, discuss. No, I'm just kidding.
That's it.
Let's play through. That was a joke. That was a bit.
And mandirs and masjids and synagogues. And we need them to behave non-psychopathically.
Discuss.
Well, okay, well.
He's killing it so far. We're one and one.
And you can't hate on the psychopathy. And divorce yourself from the power, you know, the power of the word and of song and of communal prayer and harmony.
It's something I'm wistful for. I'm wistful for a belief that I never had, in a way.
Yeah.
One of the quickest growing denominations, I think, of church attendance in America is this thing that's all in Latin.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard about this?
No.
I can't remember what it is. And it's growing massively in a young age demographic, under 30 or something. The whole thing's in Latin.
And, which can be awesome, right?
Well, I think, I'm wondering.
Vatican II may have been a kind of a big mistake. Because when you're forced to actually contend with what the words are in a modern context, they don't have the power that they sometimes have as a spell.
Well, it's difficult to switch off a very particular type of critical, vigilant, analytical mind when what you're looking to try and do is allow the experience to wash over you. So perhaps, not being, unless you're fluent in Latin, being able to just enjoy the experience and just be, maybe that is most of what you're trying to, maybe that's most of what religious service was doing. Maybe it wasn't really anything to do with the words.
I thought this was really interesting because it's so contrary to the way that I perceived religion.
Yeah.
Is because you know, and I thought they were going a certain direction when I first watched the clip, and I thought they were going to go like, oh, it's better if you have to grapple with what does this mean? Because like for me, that was something that I did always, I still have a fondness for like the King James translation when I'm reading. But I do think they're like, I enjoy reading it and then reading like, what does that mean now? Yeah. What's the, you know, and like there's, it feels, and I think it's just optics, but it feels weightier and like, it's like reading Shakespeare, like really.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting for them because when they said, oh, it's all in Latin, well, this could be good. I was like, oh, that sounds like a really horrible hour.
Yeah, sure.
In a service, you don't know what
to not understand anything. Yeah. But I thought it was also interesting to like this idea that for them, they're perceiving religion as like, oh, it's an opportunity to unplug from logic or unplug from
reason.
Like, yeah. And just like have an experience.
Yeah.
And again, this is where I'll circle back to later in the clip too, but it's like, I still struggle with then why that.
That exactly.
Why
that? Why no, church? Why would that be the expression of that desire?
Because what's the pastor you interviewed?
Irwin?
Yeah, like Irwin McManus talks about this all the time. Like, you know, faith, there's always some level of doubt. There's and it's about this expression. And I'm always like, nobody, as interesting as these conversations are, nobody has connected the dots for me as to, well, then why is church, Christianity, capital C, so important to that?
Yeah.
If it's, because you could do this at yoga, Peloton, you could do this on, you know, all the stuff you've read about in Amanda Montell's book.
Like
you can
seemingly
do,
much more useful practices as well.
But going on, we've talked about in recent episodes, like going on a walk, like I feel all that stuff when I go out without, like I'll literally leave my phone sometimes and just go, just breathe, like walk. Listen to, like, and just experience. I just struggle. There's beauty in the history and all that stuff. Like I love visiting old church at but I just was like, anyway, that was,
but why this mode down?
Yeah. I felt very conflicted watching. I was like, know, like, what?
Well, also I think some people will tend to make the correlation and think that like Latin is the original language of the Bible.
Yeah.
Which it isn't.
Even the King James, it's like, that came like several hundred years after, you know,
like they spoke
a thousand plus years after.
Right. So isn't that like, that makes it even more complicated. like the New Testament, it was written.
It came 1,611 years after.
The people are speaking Aramaic.
Right.
And then it's written in Koine Greek, which isn't even a form of Greek that exists today. And then you're going to speak it in Latin to people who speak English. There's definitely no room for confusion there.
Yeah. Right?
They say the part where they leave your offerings, they say that in English.
Yeah.
Mistranslated. Leave your offerings and your children at the bishop's office. Thank you.
Very often it isn't. I mean, it depends, you know. So we're actually meeting on Shabbat. This is the... I shouldn't have traveled here. We shouldn't be using electronic devices, but I'm not a practicing Jew at that level. But I think about what we say over the wine when we pray, you know? We have this thing where we begin, Vayihiyere vayivoker yom hashishi, vayihul vashamayim v'haretz v'kol tzivam, vayihalaluim v'yom hashvi'i melakto asher esa. Like, this is the sound of Jewish prayer, right? And then you're thinking about what it says, and it's very moving to me, because what it is it's taken directly out of Genesis. Vayihi erev, vayihi voker yom hashishi, and it was evening, and it was morning the sixth day, right? And yom is day, and shishi is six, and erev is evening, and voker is morning. So you know what the words mean. And you're actually recapitulating God's shifting from work to rest.
Sorry, just a quick note. But see, that makes more sense to me, that you know what something means, but you're using the language that ties you back to the history of it.
Sure.
That makes more sense to me than I have no idea what they're saying. It's just an experience. Like,
right. Yeah.
But that's what I mean is, like, I feel like the first part, there's like, I'm like, I agree, I disagree, I agree.
Right.
But like, to me, like, I think that's a beautiful thing about the Jewish tradition is like, there is all these roots to history.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Hinduism. Like, there's roots to this history, Christianity, whatever. But then so you're using language or iconography from the past, but understanding from the present, you know, but anyway, this part makes a lot more sense to me.
As you come to understand what the words mean, it's not destroyed by knowledge. You know that old song, by the rivers of Babylon? That's related to the grace that we say after meals. These are references that matter. And I think people are shocked. They don't know how much of their life comes from Scripture. You know, you have a round of firings at a company. Somebody says, I can read the writing on the wall. Well, do you know that that's Daniel 5:25? Do you know what the wall says? I think many, many tekelu farsin, you know, you've been measured and found wanting, your lands will be distributed to the Persians or something like that. You know, these are incredibly powerful references that we live with. You know, you think about the birds. To everything, turn, turn, turn. It's Peter Seeger's song. There is a season and a time and a purpose under heaven. It's Ecclesiastes. You think about Jimi Hendrix going off about two riders were approaching and the wind began to howl. That's Isaiah. Where are you? Where are you with the power of the word? Are you afraid to welcome it in? Are you worried that you'll lose your atheism? What are those two riders approaching? They come with news. That's the fall of Babylon. Who are the joker and the thief in that song? I believe they're on either side of Christ being crucified. Religion is interested in you whether or not you give a shit. It knows about you and it finds its way into every aspect of your life. And if you're going to be an honest atheist, you have to admit that.
That was one thing, even when I was in it, that like I didn't ever fully, it wasn't something that like resonated with me that much where it's like, but look at these sayings that come from the Bible.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's the best selling book ever. The best selling book of all time is the Bible. Of course, we're going to like, of course, we're going to have references to it. And like, that doesn't make Shakespeare's writings like truthful and accurate.
Yeah.
Or religiously or, you know, inspired, but it's like we say expressions and have trite phrases and things that we say from William Shakespeare's work all the time. You know what I mean? Like that has no bearing on whether or not religion has to be true. And like, of course religion wants you. That's how religion grows and works. Like, but that doesn't, like I said, even when I was like, fully bought in and believe, like we would have these kind of devotional things that'd be like, did you know that this phrase comes from the Bible? That's pretty crazy, right? It's like, it's actually really not that crazy. Like it makes a lot of sense to me because our, especially in America, like our entire like political history is intrinsically tied to specifically Christianity as a whole, which stems from the Bible. Like it just, that it never made sense to me to have that be like the thing. Well, here's these random songs. They come from the Bible. That's, I mean, that's God calling you, right? It's like, well, no, that's just because this book is very influential on our culture as a whole.
And vice versa. I agree. Like religion is very ubiquitous, like all these phrases and similarly, like you said, Shakespeare, like how often do you say to be or not to be, like, you know, like those phrases are so secondhand, you know, in or the Odyssey, you know, how many times do you, you know,
any massively impactful work of literature,
like we find ourselves, or the idea of flying too close to the sun, you know, like all that sort of stuff.
Right.
And, or even
from Greek mythology.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, Superman or like this, these ideas that, you know, Dark Knight, you die a hero, live long, become the villain. Like it becomes embedded in culture. And I think the other part that gets missed in these conversations is religion, yes, is everywhere in culture, but culture is also everywhere in religion. So like the themes that draw us to religion were put there by people who created religions, who had the same desires and beliefs and views.
Right.
That we probably have.
Like, right.
We want a better community. We want closer relationships with our children. We want a better marriage. We want to have the harvest be good this year. We want. And so I think like the reason that the Bible resonates as a piece of literature is the same reason that so many other books, because they're timeless truths. It's the reason Star Wars, we've been rewatching that. It's like Star Wars is such a beautiful movie series because it represents these like timeless heroic journey. Like it's no less mythology than, you know, the Odyssey or the Iliad, or like it's so similar and it hits those same notes that have resonated since before we had written words, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought watching the clip, I was like, I don't think the straying from it, at least for me, and I'm outside of that 18 and 24, so maybe I'd be more religious if I was born later. But for me, I just watch it and I go, I still, my big takeaway was like, why this modality for spirituality? Like, right. Like why is there a fear? Because Eric Weinstein's an atheist, but I see it like in the older atheist realm, with the exception of Bill Maher, like this longing for people to become religious atheists in a sense.
Hmm.
And I'm just like, why the yearning for this modality that,
right. You
know, like why are we scared of people getting more involved in a newer modern belief system? I don't know. That was my thought.
That gives you all the same benefits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah. But I do from both of them, both from his perspective as someone who is a loosely practicing Jew, I think it's appropriate.
Probably like a traditionalist Jew.
I would say most Jewish people I've encountered are like this.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not Orthodox Jews. And then from Chris, like, I do like the idea that both of them are reluctant to just dispense of all wisdom that comes from those practices. Like, that's the piece where I was like, that's my takeaway that I'm like, watching in good faith, I'm like, that's the part I can take away and go like, yeah, split testing wisdom that's been dispensed for thousands of years. But also the part I disagree with is like, but also filtering it through a modern lens and knowing like, you know, the crops aren't relying on this year.
Yeah.
You know,
right,
like that sort
right.
of thing.
And there's some things that we've figured out in the meantime that are also really helpful.
Exactly. You know? And those can be added to, we don't have to get rid of one book and have it's like, it can be added to the library.
It's not that Tucker Carlson, you know, well, it seems obvious.
It's obvious.
It's obvious. Yeah. That, you know, we, and this is not new. We've been doing this for hundreds of years. You know, it's like, well that doesn't make something true, bro. I don't understand that argument.
But I guess just to wrap up, because I know we're so close to needing to end. For those that are listening, I'd be curious to know, like, what are some things that you have kept, like what's some information you haven't dispensed of or wisdom that you haven't dispensed of? We've talked about this before and I always think it's interesting, like the scriptures that still resonate like day to day. Like, I'm curious if there's anybody watching at all. I'm curious.
Period.
No, but I'm curious. I would love to read some comments about like some practices, beliefs, rituals that have not been dispensed as you've kind of deconstructed or gone through that path. But anyway, that's we did that like pros. Right.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, thank you guys for listening and we'll see you next week.
Catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Figuring It Out podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. For more information about the show, visit www.figuringitout.tv or connect with us anywhere on social media with the handle figuringitout.tv.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.